Knowing of their likes and dislikes meant knowing how to target them with digital ads to affect their vote. Time to unfriend Facebook, read a Newsweek edition.
Over the past decade, when we saw the dominance of social media, the business performance of Facebook and to less extent Twitter have been good. They were successful trade companies, but their business red lines are so strict that they have retained them at the expense of freedom of expression, transmission of information and human rights. It's not just about Iran, Press TV, the Third World, Arab countries, Muslim world or the Middle East. This has also happened for the American people. Those companies are based in the United States. If we want to make a list of these companies' violations, it would be a long one. They don't care about offering the reality. What they care about are their stocks and the value of their companies.
Press TV's former CEO, Peyman Cebelli, has called for a parallel pressure campaign with Russia, as RT, Russia Today, has been under threat too. It was in 2018 that RT's Nikolov and Press TV's Cebelli signed a memorandum of understanding for cooperation in Tehran. That would be to take joint media and legal action against censorship crackdowns by the West.
Well, the first thing is that we anticipate what they want to do. When this foresight is there, we can take immediate action in case it happens. Fortunately, there are two important facets to the cyber world. The first is that there is a huge amount of information in circulation, and control, censorship, and other actions that would stop that flow aren't feasible. But they can monitor our data, and because there is no center to the internet, there is no command, and that's what enables us to relaunch our websites thanks to our technical and IT capabilities.
Press TV may lose momentum with every interference, at least temporarily, but it continues publishing its content round the clock on any platform possible, namely Twitter and Instagram. But it also distributes its content on its own IPTV called YourMedium.com. Given repeated censorship attacks by the U.S. tech giants Google's YouTube service. In 2021, with the sixth and seventh rounds of the Vienna talks to lift sanctions off this country, Iran's PressTV's.com domain, among others, was seized by the U.S. That was on June the 22nd of the same year. PressTV.com was not the only target, like I said. More than 30 outlets with links to the anti-Israel resistance movement were shut down. Although country domains aren't easy to block, because that would arouse international objection to undermining countries' sovereignty. So the US's act will have been a wasted effort. Iran simply continued its work on its .ir domain, so you can still reach content on www.presstv.ir. Well, Iran continues to seek ways round sabotage of its message dissemination. As far as anniversaries go, till next time. Thanks for sharing this occasion with us, but do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after, as we'll be back with different topics.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, and Sister Asma and Sayyid Abdullah. This is the first time that we have invited a sister to this program, and we actually find it an opportunity to first greet and start with her.
The pleasure is all mine, of course.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for inviting me. As I said, the pleasure is all mine, and I'm all at your service.
You're welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the studio again.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me. This is this time we're going to have the chance not to be labeled as sexists.
Yeah.
Because now we have a female in the panel.
Exactly. Thank you very much for that. Well, before we start, we got to talk about actually a very controversial subject or topic. Of course, it's not really that controversial in the world of Islam, but it may sound a little bit weird, in fact, to the Western mentality. But anyway, maybe they have replaced it with some other things that we're going to get into, in fact, all across this program or the upcoming programs. That is Genie, or we're going to talk about the movies around jinns. Well, but before we start, let's take a listen actually to a little trailer.
In the beginning, three were created. Man, made of clay. Angels made of light, and a third made of fire.
Back to the program Viewpoint on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, and my guest speakers, as always, Sayyid Abdullah, and my new guest speaker in the program, Sister Asma. Well, you just listened to a part of the trailer of the movie called Jinn, which has been produced, in fact, or it was produced in 2014 by, actually directed and written by, Ajmal Zahir Ahmad. And, of course, we didn't find very famous actors and actresses in them. Well, but the stars of these shows are Dominic Raines, Ray Park, William Atherton, Farah Tahir, and Sarinda Swan. The whole story is about a man played actually in that movie in 2014 version we are talking about. Dominic Raines turns to a mysterious pair, Ray Park and William Atherton, and a shackled mental patient for help in combating an ancient family curse. Well, Sister Asma, let me start with you, as promised. How did you find this movie?
Well, it was not that hair-raising as I expected it to be, because hearing that name brings that connotation into your brain that you're going to watch something very scary and horrendously horrifying.
Yes.
But then, thank God, I was not that scared. So this is the very first point. Then this movie has attracted my attention in some points. First, before knowing the director of that movie, I got it that it has been produced by a person who is familiar with the concept of Islam, perhaps. Because this was the first time in a Hollywood movie related to this topic, hearing things like verses of the Holy Quran or speaking of the water Zamzam or things like this. It was so interesting to see they also know about these sort of things. So it made it clear for me that the producer is someone who's already familiar with this stuff that is related to Eastern culture, not much of Western. So this was the first point that attracted my attention. And secondly, the story was nice, I guess.
I see. Well, not to mention, the box office was 297,000 and something, But I don't know about its, the budget. Do you have any ideas about its budget, Sayyid Abdullah? And by the way, it came in three languages, English, Urdu, and Arabic.
And Turkish as well.
And Turkish?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But I had a look online and I could not find the budget. But considering the fact that it was, I think, filmed within a month or two,
yes,
so it didn't take a long of filming,
mm-hmm,
there is not much of graphics happening.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's quite a few. So I would say the budget would be like very minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it will hit
exactly
a million.
Uh-huh.
Maximum. Yeah. Considering the fact that they had their own car made for the show, which was a ripoff of my favorite car, Camaro. Yeah, so the budget, I don't think it will go over a million.
I see.
It's just a very simple plan.
How did you find this movie, critically wise? Because the critical reception of this versions of movie about the gene was negative, basically. The Rotten Tomatoes, for example, approval rating of 18% based on 11 reviews only.
Mm-hmm.
And the Metacritic score of 24 out of 100 based on 5 reviews. So
it did generate a lot of negative reviews.
Yes.
Yes, but I think the idea of the whole movie, from the words of the director himself,
mm-hmm,
he wasn't trying to create some Hollywood, over-the-top graphics, whatever you want to call it, Wonderland. Rather, he said, I remember in one of the quotes, he said he was just trying to bring the correct narrative of Jin to the Western world.
And also, yes, he mentioned that he thought about it for about 10 years.
Yeah.
That was so interesting.
Yeah, so the aim was more like he was trying to narrate the story more than anything. But the critics themselves, I read the critics as well. They were mainly concerned about the dialogue,
mm-hmm,
the acting,
mm-hmm,
and the graphics, which I said it defeats the purpose, the whole thing, because that wasn't the aim anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The aim wasn't to give you a very graphical, with a lot of, high quality actors and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly.
Usually in these sort of movies, we don't have that much of dialogues that are very taking the attraction of the audience.
You don't. It's very simple, very straightforward.
Yes,
like
exactly.
It's a concept they're trying to push forward.
Yes.
Rather than anything else. So even the dialogue itself is just very basic. And like I said, the director is in Arabic. Dominic himself is Persian, right? His name is Amin Reza something.
He's
an Iranian. So most of the cast are the main
Iranian
characters.
Like origin, probably.
Iranian
because,
born.
Yeah.
He was born in Iran. So like they are familiar with this concept. So they're trying to bring it forward to the Western audience.
Yes, exactly.
It was a nice try. It's a freestyle movie, mind you.
Yes.
It's not one of the movies that goes through the process of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's like made by themselves, Exodus,
mm-hmm,
Productions.
And
they just released it. That's why they didn't make a lot of a lot of noise. I even remember because this movie, when it came, before it comes up, they put the advertisement for it back, I think before 2010,
mm-hmm,
like 3-4 years before it. And I was very excited to see the movie.
I see.
And then disappeared.
Oh.
Like for 3-4 years, they did not release it. Later on, they got released in 2010.
Uh-huh. Do you know why?
I have no idea.
I see.
They just kept saying, well, we'll release it later.
So. Okay. If you agree, let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our discussion on Jin in this program, Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
In the beginning, three were created. Man, made of clay. Angels, made of light. And a third, made of fire, called the Jin. Created with free will, this third race ruled the world for thousands of years. When man was given dominion over the earth, a sect of jinn known as the Shayateen became resentful, believing the sons of Adam were nothing more than savages. For centuries, these Shayateen have been lying in wait. But there are few who have been watching. Guardians who have sworn their bloodlines to protect man and all that is good, and ensure that darkness never overtakes this world. Man has all but forgotten that Jin ever existed. It is time for him to remember.
Back to the program. Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We are talking about a very controversial issue called jinn or genie, somehow anglicized form of it, you know. And we are specifically focusing on the movie Jinn, which was produced in 2014 by Ajmal Zahir Ahmed. Well, Sister Asma, you know, at the beginning of this movie, there is a very good, I think, introduction,
mm-hmm.
Which is somehow, I think, is somehow necessary for the Western, you know, mind and people to get to know a little bit about the genie, because they, as I said earlier at the beginning of this program, they may not be familiar with the concept. Although we have the word such as genie, which
yes.
is a new form like of the real Arabic term or terminology jinn itself, right? And they, mind you, they write it in different spellings, by the way, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. Whether it is with J or G. DJ and then the rest of it. So the movie starts with these phrases. In the beginning, three were created. Adam, made of clay. Angels, made of light.
Light.
And a third made of fire called the jinn. When man was given dominion over the earth, a set of jinn known as shayateen became resentful.
Being jealous of sons of Adam.
Yes. And they were nothing more than savages.
Mm-hmm.
It continues, right? And a war between them. This is what I wanted to ask them, because they talk about the war between the men and the
genes,
shayateen, the
yes.
shayateen type of genes, mm-hmm. all right? So why has there been a war between them?
Well,
why animosity?
Well, I guess first we have to make it clear that there are different types of jinns.
Mm-hmm.
There are some good ones and bad ones that are the demon ones. Then the fight between these bad jinns and human beings, as mentioned in the movie, is because they were jealous of human beings and they wanted to take their world back. But according to the Holy Quran, they when God created human beings, they told God that you are creating another human being,
mm-hmm.
who is going to shed blood and whatsoever, and we are already worshiping you.
Yes.
That's true. So I guess that's the entire idea upon that. They
yes.
were jealous of human beings, and perhaps they didn't want them to take their place or inhabit their world. That's why the fight has started.
I see.
But I mean, was there like a really a fight? I mean, that we never had any source.
Yes, exactly. That's what I wanted to ask
anywhere
you.
Anywhere where humans ever had a war with jinn. The way...
Well, now you see, Shaitan is a jinn.
No, Shaitan, but he's not in a war with the human beings. We never had a war with human beings.
We have a war.
We don't.
We have a prolonged war with Shaitan. Which is he's trying to deviate
us. So you're talking about temptation. Temptation is one thing, but having a war is another.
Yes.
So Shaitan, he swore an oath to Allah that he will deviate us. But even Shaitan himself and his group, like they say, they are... let's say a section or a sect of the jinn. But as human beings, we never had this war one-to-one with jinn.
We don't see that. We don't see that.
But the idea is like there wasn't... Like, you know, in Hollywood movies where they always... Like they have this... They make it very known where humans, sometimes they go to war with... for example,
other creatures, aliens.
The Titans, the movie The Titans, where
yes.
humans have fight with the Titans or they have fight with angels. And
yes.
there's like they literally make it sound as there's a war.
Yes,
we never
exactly.
had a war. So even with the Shaitan and the jinn themselves, they're in a separate realm mm-hmm. altogether. Mm-hmm. They don't come in contact with us. That's one thing. But as having a literal war with us, we never did. Temptation is another topic.
Mm-hmm.
Trying okay. so hard to tempt someone is called fight.
Well, that's metaphorically.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take this fight actually to the episodes to come, and then we'll continue our program Viewpoint about genies, in fact, by focusing on the movies in Hollywood produced more specifically in this program. In fact, we've worked on the 2014's version, American action horror thriller film, written and directed by Ajmal Zahir Ahmad. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. This is The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars and ulama all across the world of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So, Sayyid Muhsin al-Tabatabai al-Hakim is the personality with whom we are mainly concerned for today's discussion. One of the great ulama of the country of Iraq and the whole Muslim Shia lands and world. مرجع تقلید, you know, and the author of مستمسك العروه الوثقی, his most outstanding work, will dedicate to this discussion to his works is called The Life and the Sociopolitical Life, سید محسن طباطبایی الحکیم. شیخ زیاینی, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the early life of this outstanding man.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. Late Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Hakim al-Tabatabai was born in 1306 in Iraq, according to lunar calendar, after Hijra. And the city in which he was born is Najaf al-Ashraf.
Yes.
The vicinity of the shrine of Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. And we know that the family of Hakim is one of the most important families in recent century.
Yes.
And they have played a really important role in different aspects of, you know, even in sociopolitical, yes, and also cultural activities and cultural movements in Iraq society. So Sayyid Mohsen Hakim was born in Najaf, and his father was also a clergyman and was a scholar, which name was Sayyid Mahdi al-Hakim.
That's right.
And when he was 6 years old, his father passed away and he lost his father.
Okay.
And the family was a big family. There were 10 boys and 4 girls inside the family. Hmm. And most of these, you know, brothers were entered into the Islamic seminary of Hawza.
Okay.
And studied Islamic studies. And, you know, after some years, were amongst the important figures in the society of Iraq.
That's all right.
We should know that Sayyid Mohsen al-Hakim started from when he was 7 years old. He started reading Quran and writing and, you know, reading words. And from 9 years old, he started his Islamic studies. Okay. And because he was in Najaf, he was at the ocean of knowledge at that time.
Yes.
And his brother Sayyid Mahmoud and some other teachers were his teachers in primary levels. And then in higher levels, he got benefit from the great scholars of that time, like Grand Ayatollah Akhund Khorasani, Grand Ayatollah Agha Zia Iraqi, Sheikh Ali Jawahiri, Muhammad Hussein Naini, and many other big names that he benefit from them in the city of Najaf.
Okay, that's all right. And usually what a beautiful habit is this among the religious family, you know, to study the Islamic studies at the Islamic houses from very early ages.
Yeah.
For example, 8, 9, 7, you know, Quran, starting with the Quran, Arabic literature or something like that. And when the kid is just very much early and young, he is habituated to the house studies and the house atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, something which is very nicely done, specifically in famous families and religious families like Hakim families. Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, you give us some information about the life of Sayyid Mohsen al-Hakim. After the late Ayatollah Burujerdi, he becomes a marja or something like that, isn't it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think it's better to mention that after the demise of Ayatollah Mirza Muhammad Hussein al-Naini, one of the grand ulama of the Iraq, some of the muqallideen and followers of Mirza al-Naini come to Ayatollah Hakim and ask him to assume this position of becoming a marja. But at that moment, he is not that much interested of taking this position. But after the demise of Sayyid Abul Hasan Isfahani, who is the head of, at that time, was the head of the Hawza of Iraq, this position actually established for Ayatollah Hakim to take the position of marja. But it was after the demise of Ayatollah Burujerdi, as you said, that he became very popular and famous all around the Shia world.
Okay.
Because of the position of Ayatollah Burujerdi, he was really famous and popular among most of the Shias. So after his demise, Sayyid Mohsen Hakim, specifically in Iraq, he was really famous and became a kind of marja-e-am at that time.
Okay.
So I think it's better to put it this way, for the position of the marja'iyya.
But politically, he was active too, you know, the founder of Jamaatul Ulama Society, isn't it, or foundation in Iraq. Let's talk a little bit about this aspect of the life, and then we get to the scholarly life of Sayyid Mohsen al-Hakim.
Yes, politically, it's really important to talk about this aspect of his life, because usually when we are talking about the Maharaj, maybe this part of their life might be overlooked and not talked about. So for Ayatollah Hakim, this is a very important part of his life. Why? Because when we look at his biography, we see at his time, he was informed that youth are joining communism in groups. Several groups. Every day, every now and then, one group of youth are joining this communism. And back then, communism would have been backed by the head of the party of Ba'ath, who was Abdul Karim Qasim. Mm-hmm. And it was really risky and dangerous for a merja to oppose the stance of the president of the government. But he did.
That's right.
We see there is one fatwa which has been issued from Ayatollah Hakim saying that joining to the communism is forbidden. This will result in kufr and ilhad. Mm-hmm. It means that this will result in apostasy.
Yes.
There was a significant role for this stance which was taken by Ayatollah Hakim, which prevent many youth. Why? Because of the families would prevent their youth and children because of having this fatwa. Okay. And it was a very influential opposition against the government of Iraq back then. And besides this action or reaction, we have a lot of stances to be taken by Ayatollah Hakim against the Israel.
That's right.
The moment they attacked Masjid al-Aqsa.
Okay.
He actually stand against that. And
this Jamaat al-Ulama was, we can say, founded in order to oppose communism or something like that, or no?
To bring about unification among all of the ulama. When you take the stance, all ulama are backing you.
Okay.
So they are in the same side.
Okay.
So even by that time, we see, because it was before the revolution, I mean, in Iran, it was before the revolution, and the government of Iran, headed by the Shah, was under the influence of the Israel.
That's right.
We see his opposition to the ex-government of Iran, which was led by Shah.
That's right.
So even for the all those things which happened in June 5th, in 1342 in Faiziyah, that they killed many of the tulab and the students of seminary school, we see Ayatollah Hakim took a very harsh stand against the Shah government in Iran.
That's all right. Okay. Scholarly speaking, Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen al-Hakim is known for his commentary written on Al-Urwat al-Wusqa, which was originally written by Sayyid Muhammad Kazem Tabatabai Yazdi. We dedicated one of our sessions to this outstanding man and his work. And his work is known as Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wusqa, which is usually very much seen in the shelves of these Islamic seminaries as one of the best, we can say, commentaries or explanations written on al-Urwat al-Wusqa. First, talk a little bit about this Mustamsak style of writing for us. What is it exactly? And why this work of Ayatollah Hakim has become significant, Sheikh?
Yeah, you know, Urwat al-Wusqa was the most famous book, fiqh book at that time in Islamic seminary of Najaf, even all around the world in Islamic seminaries for Shia school of thought. I mean, among the contemporary books. Of course, we had Jawahir al-Kalam, we had Sharah al-Islam, we had many books, but amongst the contemporary books, Urwat al-Wusqa was the most famous book, so that every scholar would publish a commentary on this book, I mean, Al-Urwat al-Wusqa. But the work of Sayyid Mohsen al-Tabatabai al-Hakim is special in the case of being, you know, very, very vast and also talking about details in deep, you know, discussion and, you know, scholarly discussion that the author gives. So we should say that Mustamsak Urwat al-Wusqa is a book in which every discussion of fiqh is posed according to the book of Urwat al-Wusqa. And beside having the text of Urwat al-Wusqa, then the author, I mean, Marhum al-Hakim, starts to give the sources and the origins and the reasons upon which this fatwa is is given by marhum Sahib al-Urwa, that is marhum Sayyid Muhammad Tabatabai Yazdi.
That's right. So it is a kind of, as you say, istidlali or argumentative analysis.
Yes. Okay, so that's why we say that this book is an argumentative or istidlali fiqh book. And because in the highest level of fiqh studies, that is Darsul Kharij, that is similar to PhD level in universities, this type of discussion is very important.
That's right.
That you give the reason and then the pros and cons are given and is discussed. And finally, you came to a position that whether which of the previous ideas are correct or you may claim that all of them are not correct, and you give yourself a new idea that you have to give also your argumentations for it.
So you have to reach the level of ijtihad in order to have a better understanding of Urwat al-Wusqa and then write a Mustamsak on that.
Yes.
Okay, that's all right.
And the most important point regarding Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wusqa and the books like this, that even Marhum Khoui also wrote a book in this regard, and many other scholars have also compiled such books. The most important point regarding these books is that these books are giving the method of ijtihad to newcomers in this field.
Very good.
So if a person who has finished his higher studies in Islamic studies and in fiqh, and now he wants to enter into ijtihadi and, you know, argumentative course, he is in need of books like Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wuthqa to know how he is in need of gaining the sources and looking at the sources, riwayat, ayat, and how he may collect and put these resources beside each other and also come to a final decision.
That's right.
Because maybe some riwayat at the first glance may be contradictory to each other.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, anything missed about the life of Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim? Your final remarks.
I think the only thing that we may mention for the final remarks, we have to say he stood with the truth till the death, because it is mentioned in his biography that for the last years of his life, he had been kept in house arrest.
Okay, yes.
So it was because of the plot they did against him. As I mentioned previously, I said that he took a very harsh stance against the government of Abdul Karim al-Qasim, and it was because of the youth of Iraq not to join communism. So they had a plot. Actually, they were looking for an excuse to kill this alim deprive the Shia community from such a beneficial alim. That's why they put someone like named Medhad al-Hajj Sirri, if I'm not mistaken with his pronunciation, to show up in the TV and say that we, in cooperation with the Shah of Iran and also with Sayyid al-Hakim, had this plot to overthrow the Ba'ath regime. So because of this, they said, okay, now from now onwards, he's going to be kept under the control in house arrest. And after a while, they demolished his house. They cut the electricity, they cut the water, and sent him away to Kufa. Yes. And it is mentioned that when he had been hospitalized because of one of the serious disease in his body, he had been hospitalized in one of the hospitals in London. His son met him for the last moments and asked him, "Oh, father, how do you analyze the situation now that they did all these games against you?" He said, "I know what has happened. I'm sure that I didn't won the game against them, but I'm sure that the people of Iraq are not going to forget the sacrifice that I did for them, in favor of them, to know the truth, not to get astray from the truth." And we see, till now, many places, many masjids here and there in Iraq are named under their name. And people are giving much respect even to his tomb, which is actually in his library.
He had Masjid al-Hindi or Hindi mosque beside the library, that's right. Really a hard and difficult situation and life for Ayatollah Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim, even assassinating, you know, his sons, some of his sons, the most outstanding one, of course, so many years later, Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Hakim, who was assassinated in the city of Najaf, may Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man too. It was Rabiul Awwal 27th, 1390, according to the Hijra calendar. At the age of 80, this outstanding man passed away in Baghdad, and his body was taken into the holy city of Najaf and was buried in Masjid-e-Hindi or Hindi Mosque beside his own library. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man. Ameen, the author of Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wusqa, also the founder of Jamaat al-Ulama in Iraq. Sayyid Muhsin Tabatabai al-Hakim, or Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim al-Tabatabai. Thank you, my Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziania, for your presence in the program, The Teacher. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The Most Blessed Marriage. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and heartiest felicitations to you all on a very auspicious day. Today is the first of the Islamic month of Dhul-Hajjah, the month in which the Hajj pilgrimage is observed every year, but the day has a special significance in the annals of Islamic history because of a memorable occasion whose blessed branches brought Islam to fruition and continues to nourish believers throughout the globe in every age and place. Yes, friends, it is the day on which a lasting union between two very virtuous persons of all time was solemnized by the Almighty's last and greatest messenger to all mankind, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. To be precise, it is the day when the noblest ever lady, the Prophet's immaculate daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, was married on the commandment of God to the noblest ever person after the Prophet, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. Before we present you an exclusive feature in this regard, let us listen to Ayah 21 of Surah Rum of the Noble Quran, where God Almighty says, "And of his signs is that he created for you spouses from amongst yourselves, that you may take comfort in them. And he ordains affection and mercy between you. There are indeed signs in that for a people who reflect." As is evident by the wordings of this ayah, God has decreed marriage as the formal bond of affection and love between a man and a woman to help build a virtuous family unit, which in turn would result in laying the foundations of a sound and healthy society. It is the most revered institution in Islam, and in the words of the Prophet of Islam, that no foundation has been built in Islam more loved by Allah than marriage. The Prophet himself set the perfect precedent in this regard, years before the formal declaration of his mission, when he accepted the offer of marriage with the most virtuous lady of his times, the monotheist Khadija bin Khubaylid, known as Tahire or the Pure, for refusing to marry any person until she came across her distant cousin, the poor but honest and ethically upright orphan son of Abdullah and Amina bint Wahab. In view of the wealth of the Umm al-Mu'mineen, or Mother of All True Believers, a title given by God, the marriage was celebrated with daily feasts to feed the whole city of Mecca for over a month. The two made a perfect pair, although they lost their two sons, Qasim and Abdullah, to the cold hands of death in infancy. In that childless status, they took under their care the Prophet's dearest little cousin, Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, who later in life would say in one of his famous sermons recorded in the book Nahjul Balagha, "You know that due to my close relationship and the special rank I enjoyed with the Messenger of Allah, I have a distinguished position with him. He took me in his lap when I was a baby. He often kept me embraced to his heart. He used to make me sleep next to him. We used to be so close to each other that I felt the warmth of his body and smelled his fragrance. I followed him step by step as a baby camel follows its mother. He used to place a fresh code of behavior before me daily and instruct me to follow it. Every year, he would stay in the cave of Hira. Nobody would be with him but me. The house of Islam was made up of the Messenger of Allah, Lady Khadijatul Kubra, peace upon her, and me. I used to see the light of revelation and I smell the fragrance of prophethood." God Almighty, a few years after commanding the best of creation to formally announce his universal mission of Islam, granted the couple a radiant daughter, Fatimatu Zahra, peace upon her, the Kothar, or spring of virtuous abundance mentioned in the Noble Quran, to ensure perpetuity for the progeny of Prophet and Hazrat Khadija, peace upon them. She was conceived of the apple of paradise that the Prophet was given to eat during his mi'raj, or ascension to the highest point in the heavens and back to the planet Earth in a fraction of a night. While still a child, the one and only daughter of the Seal of Messengers lost her mother, whose proverbial wealth had been spent to the last dirham by the Prophet, with her permission to feed, clothe, and shelter the persecuted Muslim community of Mecca. In Medina, following her father's migration from Mecca, the immaculate girl came of age. Soon suitors approached the Prophet for her hand. But how could he marry to anyone in Arabia? The Sayyidat al-Nisa'ul Alameen min al-Awwaleen wal-Akhirin, or the noblest lady of all times. An impeccable lady needs an impeccable gentleman for the blessed union of marriage in order to avoid a disaster. This was this reason Mary, the mother of the Prophet Jesus, peace upon her, stayed a virgin throughout her life. The Prophet of Islam was waiting for divine commandment and thus turned away all suitors, including some of his wealthy companions, who, accustomed to the customs of Jahiliyat, in which they had spent the greater part of their idolatrous life, sent proposals for marriage to him with an eye on further developments to legitimize their claims to his political legacy when the need arises. Soon the word from the heavens came. Archangel Gabriel descended, saying, "O Prophet of Allah, the Almighty has chosen you and make you the most respected and superior among his creatures, and has selected Ali as your brother. He, the Almighty, decreed the nikah of your daughter Fatima, his most obedient servant, with his other most obedient servant Ali, on the fourth heaven, where he ordered all his angels to gather, dressed in the ornaments of heaven. He then filled the fourth heaven with celestial light and ordered Adam, the father of mankind, to recite sermon to begin the nikah ceremony. After the sermon, Allah ordered the angel Rahil, who has been bestowed with the most eloquent voice, to recite Hamd. He then informed me that he has performed the nikah of his servant Fatima, peace upon her, with his other chosen servant Imam Ali, and that I should spread this news among the angels. I acted accordingly and made all the angels testify the event. Allah then ordered me to write this event in the silken cloth of paradise and present it to you. Accordingly, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, following the proposal for marriage from Imam Ali, peace upon him, happily solemnized the marriage of his only daughter with him, thus planting the blessed tree of perpetual munificence, which flowered with the birth of the impeccable sons, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace upon them, and in the next generations, the infallible imams of the offspring of the martyr of Karbala. Mother, the Lady of Light, gave to the society four immaculate children, two sons and two daughters, all of whom carved out immortal niches in the history of mankind through their faith, patience, prudence, piety, valor, wisdom, forbearance, and sacrifices, the peak of which is the heart-rending tragedy of Karbala. If her elder son, Imam Hassan Mojtaba, peace upon him, had relinquished the rule of a vast realm for the sake of preservation of the values of Islam, her younger son, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, gave his life blood in defense of humanitarian values. Her daughters too excelled in the social arena, as is evident by the epoch-making sermons in Kufa and Damascus of Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, and the role this dynamic lady played in the aftermath of the tragedy of Karbala to immortalize and universalize the message of her martyred brother. Her younger daughter, Hazrat Umm Kulthum, peace upon her, also played a unique role during the journey of the caravan of captives from Karbala to Kufa to Damascus and to Medina. Thus, the anniversary of the blessed marriage of Imam Ali and Hazrat Fatima, peace upon them, and the role in building the model family of emulation for all Muslims serves as the lasting lessons for all sections of the Ummah in every age, era, and place, in safeguarding faith and virtue within the framework of a virtuous household, in addition to carrying out duties in society whenever the situation required. In honor of the marriage of Hazrat Fatima and Imam Ali, peace upon them, the Islamic Republic of Iran every year marks the first of Dhul-Hajjah as Marriage and Family Day. In order to encourage couples to follow the examples of the most virtuous ever husband and wife pair. After marriage, the couple normally plans the division of works and household chores. In view of the physical differences between males and females, Islam has introduced different roles for men and women, in harmony with their respective natures. Proper division of work creates balance in family life. The handling of responsibilities by the pair thus builds mutual trust and surrounds them with an aura of love and affection that is so essential for raising sound and healthy children. In view of this, Islam has entrusted the husband who is physically stronger than the delicate spouse with the task of earning money for the household through different means, including outdoor duties that require strength and endurance. It is here that the exemplary life of our divinely appointed leaders shows us the way. Once, Imam Ali and Hazrat Fatima, peace upon them, concerning housework, sought the opinion of the Prophet, who said that indoor jobs should be handled by the wife, while outdoor duties is the responsibility of the husband. Hazrat Fatima, peace upon her, got happy and said, "I am very pleased that the Prophet saved me from work that is related to men or causes frequent association with men." This is further proof of the fact that in Islam, in harmony with the system of creation, has allocated both men and women certain duties and responsibilities that are in line with their nature and physical characteristics. Islam emphasizes that spiritual aspects of doing housework and has offered the couple incentives by speaking of the rewards reserved for the husband and wife for carrying out their respective responsibilities. When a woman feels that her work is a kind of worship, she will definitely strive to win the content of the loving Creator rather than feeling bored of her duties. Moreover, in order to ease the burden of the housework for women and to create affection between the couple, Islam has encouraged men to help their wives in housework as well. There are many instances when Imam Ali used to help Hazrat Fatima, peace upon her, in the housework in addition to his outdoor duties. The Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, used to procure water and firewood, while Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, would grind flour and bake bread." In Islam, unlike other creeds and cultures, regards men and women as equal human rights, and it does not prevent women from playing social roles. The history of Islam presents numerous instances of the role played by virtuous women in society, roles that did not hinder the wife's main responsibility in the family. A woman's work in the society usually has certain problems, and sometimes it endangers her health and spirit. Yet, we find in Islamic teachings and the history of Islam how virtuous ladies doubtlessly carried out such work whenever the situation required, without neglecting their household chores. To sum up, Imam Ali, peace upon him, used to remark, "By Allah, I never angered Fatima or forced her to do something, nor did she ever anger or disobey me. In fact, whenever I looked at her, all gloom would be removed from my heart." Dear listeners, congratulations again and goodbye.
Seven barometric pressure. come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. We would like to congratulate the Muslim Ummah on the beginning of the sacred Hajj season, that we've entered the blessed month, one of the forbidden months, which is the